For our Blitz study, and I have just been blown away by some of the things I cannot wait to share with y'all in 3 weeks. But tonight, what I want to do is just kind of get our minds ready for that study by looking at the book of Ezekiel together. Let me give you just a couple of quick notes about our Blitz study. Y'all can thank Sabrina for the new time for it. This is one of her ideas, and I think it was a really good idea, Sabrina. We've had three Blitz studies so far, yeah. The last three have been on Friday nights from 6 to 1, and I know for those of y'all that work full weeks that that is near impossible to stay up for. So Sabrina had the idea, let's just try one on Saturday. And so I got some counsel from some other people here, and we decided to do it on this Saturday instead. And so it's going to be at the Okolona, I can't remember the name of it, the Okolona Library, the one that Bonnie lives at half the time. It's going to be there the Saturday after our annual singing from 10 to 4, and we are going to just study the book of Revelation together. Y'all can thank Matt for the topic. Where are you, Matt? Where are you? There you are. I asked all of our under 30s, I said, so what do y'all want to study for the next split study? We've done Ezekiel, we've done David, we've done Isaiah, and Matt blurted out, Revelation! And I have told you all 100 times, I will teach Revelation when we're ready for it. Because I've used this analogy before, teaching Revelation to a new Christian or to a unlearned Christian is like teaching calculus to a kindergartner. They may know some of the cool symbols, but they're going to have no clue what they're actually doing. Revelation's like that. Revelation assumes that you know Isaiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, Zechariah very, 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 very well. Much like the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel's a very, very rich book, but it assumes that you know the book of Leviticus like the back of your hand. Revelation assumes that you know Isaiah, Daniel, Ezekiel, and Zechariah very, very well. Well, we have now studied, some of you have at least with me, Ezekiel, Daniel, and Isaiah, and we're about to do Zechariah. So with that in mind, I was like, okay, I'm finally going to bite the bullet, and we're going to do our first study of Revelation. This will be our introductory study to Revelation. Revelation is not a book that you just read once and got it for the rest of my life. Much like any book of the Bible, you study it, meditate on it, spend a few years thinking about it, and finally make up your mind about what the book is about. I think it's going to be a very rich study. For me personally, our Ezekiel study and our Isaiah studies, I loved it. The David study was fine. But y'all know I love symbolic, prophetic, apocalyptic language. And I'm really excited to get into the book of Revelation with y'all here in 3 weeks. So I figured what I would do is just go through some preparatory things so that for those of you all that would like to spend the next 3 weeks preparing with me, you can be preparing. I'm going to recommend to you the best way to prepare for this study is not by reading Revelation. Yes, read it a couple of times. The best way to prepare for this is look back through your notes for Daniel, Isaiah, and Ezekiel. Go ahead and read through Zechariah, and then we'll work through Revelation together. I really think that's the best way to get ready for that study is getting well equipped with those Old Testament prophets before we get to Revelation together. And then I think when we do that, it's going to be a very rich study. I'm really excited about it. So before we get to that, let me just say one other thing real quick. I wasn't going to say anything until this morning. I just had so many positive, just encouraging comments about what happened last week. I'm just going to clear the air for everybody so that you know what's happened. The individual who did it came to me in complete privacy. And y'all remember my 2 sermons I preached about peacemakers before camp? Went through that process perfectly. This individual and I have had a good conversation. Forgiveness has been given and nothing else is going to be said. Oftentimes in conflict, I have found that the people last to forgive are those that are least involved. This should not be one of those scenarios. I will admit, I'm still having anxiety issues about what I went through. I'm still having nightmares, not every night, but quite a few nights about choking. And it's still difficult to talk about, y'all. For those of you that have gone through that, where you just can't breathe, it was the scariest moment of my life. That and when Brooklyn choked were the 2 scariest moments of my whole life. I'm still working through that anxiety. I'm praying about it. I'm turning that over to God. It's something that's going to take time for me to work through, and I'm going to need your all's patience with me because it was something that still is just difficult to talk about. And I do appreciate all of the kindness and love that you all have shown me, because in general, this whole body has shown me the love of Christ this last week, because y'all know I've needed it. I was expecting to come back from camp telling you a bunch of funny things that kids did. I did not think that I would tell you that I wouldn't be able to breathe for a full minute. And going through that then has just given me a new focus on a lot of things, and I appreciate so much all the encouragement, but it is in the past. I still need your support and your prayers. Jessica needs your prayers as she seeks to comfort me and help build me up for my anxiety over this, because for those of you that have been through something like that, you know you don't just get over it in one night. It takes a lot of time and prayer to be able to work through a circumstance like that. Just appreciate everything like that. That's all I'm going to say about that. There's nothing else that needs to be said, and it should never be mentioned again. Peacemakers. All right, let's talk about Ezekiel. So Melinda gave me this idea. Where are you, Melinda? Melinda came to the Ezekiel study, and I think you made it all the way to 11:30 that night. Melinda left right before the good part. We did this one. It was the last Friday of July last year. And about 11:45, it started thundering and lightning. And that's when we got through the last 8 chapters of Ezekiel, where Ezekiel sees these angelic visions that are just enrapturous. And as we read through these with the lightning and the lights flickered inside, it was cool. But Melinda said afterwards, she's like, Ryan, you covered a lot of material. Can you just give me a quick reference guide for the book of Ezekiel? So Melinda, this is 4 months late, but here it is. What I'd like to do tonight is just introduce you to the book of Ezekiel, and then I'm going to work us through chapter 1 and a little bit of chapter 10, okay? Possibly chapter 43 if we have time. As I said, John draws heavily from the book of Ezekiel. Really, I think above all others, if there is one book that you have time to spend over the next 3 weeks, it's the prophet Ezekiel. John just draws heavily from the book of Ezekiel. In the Gospel of John, it's interesting. Isaiah is the book that he quotes from more often than not. In the book of Revelation, however, it's the prophet Ezekiel that he draws very heavily from. And much as we learned in our John class, you don't understand the Gospel of John unless you get that Isaiah context that he's drawing into the book. Likewise, in Revelation, we have to understand what that Old Testament context is to really understand what Revelation is about. If you jump into Revelation without knowing the Old Testament context, you're going to have absolutely no earthly clue what's going on. Because Revelation is written in apocalyptic language. I'm going to skip down a little bit. I'm not going to go through this in full order, but if you'll look on that outline, the language in Ezekiel. Ezekiel used highly symbolic, apocalyptic language to describe the unseen spiritual realities to the captives. So let me read that one more time. That's a dense sentence. Ezekiel used highly symbolic, apocalyptic language to describe the unseen spiritual realities to the captives. What does that mean? Listen, for example, to Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 10. As for the likeness of their faces, each had a human face. The four had the face of a lion. On the right, the four had the face of an ox, the left, the four, the face of an eagle. And such were their faces, and their wings were spread out above. Each creature had 2 wings, each of which touched the wing of another, while 2 covered their bodies. And each went straight forward. Wherever the spirit would go, they went as they went. As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire. What in the world is this about? What in the world is this about? This is weird. There's no other way to say it. Keep Louisville weird. This should be the motto of the book of Revelation and Ezekiel. Keep Ezekiel weird. What is this about? Let me explain briefly how to get this. I'm going to use a metaphor here. Understanding apocalyptic language is kind of like coffee. You don't like coffee the first time you drink it. It's an acquired taste. You typically have to water it down with some cream and sugar. Then as you grow up, you take out the sugar, you get rid of the cream, and you drink it like a grown-up. And then you love it, and you can't get through the day without it. That's how apocalyptic language is. Some of you need to grow up, by the way. When you look at apocalyptic language, you don't read it the first time and love it. you look for it and you're kind of like, well, here's a cool spiritual principle I can get from this. Here's one thing that I understand, but I'm going to water down the rest of it and come back to it later. Then when you finally get the full substance of what's going on, you're like, man, I can't live without this. It's incredible language. Because what it's doing is providing for us a glimpse into the heavenly realities of the spiritual realm in ways that just normal, literal language can't. Ezekiel, much like John, has visions of the heavenly realm. And what each of them do is use this weird language because each of them have seen things they just can't even begin to explain. And the only way their readers are going to understand what's going on is if they use this weird language to try to explain these visions of what they have seen. Well, who then was the prophet Ezekiel? Who was Ezekiel? Look at the very top of the outline with me. Who was Ezekiel? Ezekiel was a prophet priest who prophesied to the Hebrew captives in Babylon. Okay, couple of key words here. Number one, he is a prophet priest. So he is a priest, ergo he is from the tribe of Levi. Much of the language and imagery of Ezekiel is going to draw from the Torah, from the temple, from sacrifices. It is a retelling of it. The second important key word here is Babylon. Whereas Jeremiah was with the remaining Israelites in the land of Israel, Daniel is with the king in his high court. They're contemporaries of Ezekiel. Ezekiel's with the people. He was with the Israelite captives, taken into captivity, and he will be with the people. What then is Ezekiel saying? Look at the prophetic importance of Ezekiel. Ezekiel explained why God's glory left the exiles and how God would return to them in the land, restoring the Torah and the temple. This is the key theme of Ezekiel. The glory of God has left, it will return. That's the theme of Ezekiel. The glory of God has left, the glory will return. Now, in that, he does a lot of, it's a long book. He does a lot of things in these 48 chapters. He explains why the glory has left. He explained what it looked like for that glory to leave. He explains why the people have been taken away from the glory of God. And he explains what it looks like when that glory will return. But that's the basic message that Ezekiel is getting at. And if you read it from that perspective, the whole book makes a lot more sense, explaining why the glory leaves and how it will return. The outline then of Ezekiel. It's a very basic outline, but very rich. The first three chapters are introduction, where Ezekiel gets his call. He'll receive another one of these in chapter 33, by the way, which is that major division in the text, chapter 1 and chapter 33. 4 through 24, he talks about judgment on Jerusalem. 25 through 32, he talks about judgment on the nations. And then 33 following are promises of restoration that God will bring to his people. Now, much like Isaiah, where Isaiah 1 through 39 is mainly judgment and then 40 through 66 is mainly hope, you have judgment in the latter part of Isaiah, and you have hope in the earlier part of Isaiah. Same as with Ezekiel. The main thrust of 1 through 32 are judgment. The main thrust of 33 through 48 are hope, but you'll still have some interspersed themes through there. The time period then, if you date the beginning of this, and he receives his last chronological order in chapter 27. The book is not in chronological order, by the way. It's in thematic order. It goes from 593 to 571 BC. Now, Andy, this morning, when did we say Haggai was? 520-ish, right? So we're around 520-ish. Zerubbabel comes back in. Yeah, 35, 36, right? So let's do a little math here, y'all. At camp, I asked my students, I said, all right, Moses came back in 1500, about, and then you have Daniel around 600. How many years is that? I had to go to five campers before they could tell me 900 years. Math is not some of our strong suit. It was humorous, sorry. So if you look briefly at the years, Ezekiel begins in 593. Now, you should know this is a very important date, around 586. What happens in 586? There you go. The temple's destroyed. Ezekiel begins prophesying before the downfall of Jerusalem. It's very important as you go through the book. The temple doesn't fall until you get to around chapter 10. If you read the first 9 chapters thinking the temple's gone, it makes no living sense. He begins before the temple's destroyed, but goes after the destruction of the temple. And then if you'll do the math, he leads us through the time of Zerubbabel within a couple of decades. So Zerubbabel and Joshua would have certainly known of the prophecies of Ezekiel and all that that entailed. I'll just make one quick note. If you read through Ezekiel this week, understand how that shapes Haggai 2. Haggai 2 is drawn right out of the prophet of Ezekiel. He's a very important prophet. I talked about the language in Ezekiel. Let me give you a couple of connections in Revelation. John draws heavily from Ezekiel, explaining how Jesus has fulfilled and is continuing to fulfill the spiritual promise of this Levitical temple-oriented prophet. So as you go through Revelation, so much of the language comes from Ezekiel because they're explaining the same thing, but just from two very different perspectives. And that'll help you as you read. And finally, here are some important promises as you go through the book. He promises a new heart and a new spirit. He and Isaiah have more promises about the Spirit, the coming of the Holy Spirit, than all of the other prophets combined. He promises a new covenant, much like Jeremiah 31. He promises that God will make a second exodus when they go into the remnant and they return to the land. And finally, he prophesies that God's glory will again come back to the temple. Think of Haggai. All right. So this is just your quick overview of the prophet Ezekiel. If you've never read through the book, it can kind of just be like a tool to get you started. If you were in the Blitz study, hopefully it's a good reminder. But that's just your intro to Ezekiel. And I would encourage you, if you do plan on coming to the Revelation study, try to read through it. If you don't have time to read through it before the Blitz study, please still come. You won't be lost, I promise. But it will just enrich the study that we're going to have. And as we go through that 6-hour study together, you'll be like, oh, Ezekiel, 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 Ezekiel. And you won't be wondering, why are there these 4 living creatures? Hint, Ezekiel already talked about them. You won't be wondering, what is this new Jerusalem? Hint, Ezekiel already talked about it. So much that John draws from is already out of the prophet Ezekiel, and it'll just make the book fit a whole lot better together for you. All right, well, that's my quick intro. Let's get into the text. Y'all know I love Ezekiel. I like Isaiah, he's good, but Ezekiel and I are buddies. This is a book that I feel at home in. I love Ezekiel. He is someone that I think if he were to just sit down and talk, I would know what he would say. Ezekiel is a prince of a prophet. Look at Ezekiel 1 with me. Ezekiel 1, verse 1. In the 30th year, in the 4th month, this is probably his birthday. Let me explain this. Ezekiel's probably 30, which is important because priests began their priestly duty at age 30, much like Jesus. All right, Ezekiel 1, verse 1. In the 30th year, in the 4th month, on the 5th day of the month, as I was among the exiles by the Chebar Canal, the heavens were exposed and I saw visions of God. On the 5th day of the month, it was the 5th year of the exile of King Jehoiakim, the word of the Lord came to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the Chebar Canal, and the hand of the Lord was upon him there. There's our intro. Now let's look at his vision. Verse 4. As I looked, behold, a stormy wind came out of the north, and a great cloud with brightness around it, and fire flashing forth continually, and in the midst of the fire, as it were gleaming metal. And from the midst of it came the likeness of 4 living creatures. And this was their appearance. They had a human likeness, but each had 4 faces, and each of them 4 wings. Now, when you work through a text like Ezekiel, this is not a text that you just read through once and get. You have to stop and chew on it. Listen to verse 4. A stormy wind with a great cloud with brightness and fire came before them. What does that remind you of? What does that remind you of? You have the cloud, the fire, all coming together. Daniel, that is language from? Yes, this is Sinai language. This is God leading the people through the Exodus and taking them to Sinai. And here again, you have that great, glorious cloud of the Lord coming to the people But notice what this cloud is doing. Verse 7. Their legs were straight. The soles of their feet were like the soles of a calf's foot, and they sparkled like burnished bronze. Under their wings, on their four sides, they had human hands. And the four had their faces and their wings thus. Their wings touched one another. Each of them went straight forward without turning as they went. As for their likeness, each had a human face. The four had the face of a lion on the right side, four the face of an ox on the left, and four the face of an eagle. Such were their faces. And the wings were spread out above. Each creature had two wings, each of which touched the wing of another, while two covered their bodies. And each went straight forward. Wherever the spirit would go, they went, without turning as they went. As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire, like the likeness of torches moving to and fro among the living creatures. And the fire was bright, and out of the fire went forth lightning, and the living creatures darted to and fro like the appearance of the flash of lightning. Now, let's just work through this text together. As you look at the text, a few details we need to work through. Number one, why are there four living creatures? Why are there four living creatures? Well, if you square four, you get 16. If you do 16 plus four, you get 20. If you take 20 and multiply it by zero, you get zero. Therefore, it means zero. Believe it or not, read some commentaries on Revelation, my math makes a whole lot more sense than what I just told you. Why are there four? Well, look at verse 17. When the creatures went, or the wheels went, they went in any of the four directions without turning as they went. Well, there's four directions, therefore there's four creatures. It's pretty simple. y'all, a problem with Ezekiel, much like Revelation is, you start, I'm going to use a term Bruce used, you start mysticizing it. You start thinking, all right, there's four creatures. And if you take four and multiply it by yourself, you get 16. And add that to four, you get 20. So this is going, we are going to have these four living creatures come in 2020. I bet you they're even going to come on April 4th of 2020. No. Understand, whenever the prophet tells you there's four and there's four, well, the reason is there's four directions. Here's the point. If a creature is going north, a creature is going south, a creature is going east, a creature is going west, they're going everywhere. That's the point. The reason you have these four living creatures come is they are going everywhere. So here, look at verse 4 again. You have this cloud come, and in the midst of this cloud, you have the appearance of the likeness of it. Again, understand this phrase, the appearance of the likeness of it. What he's saying is it kind of possibly looked like this. This is the best thing I can come up with. But these four creatures are going everywhere. In verse 13, as for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire, like the appearance of torches moving to and fro among the living creatures. The fire was bright, and out of the fire went forth burning lightning, and the living creatures darted to and fro like the appearance of the flash of lightning. Here's the point. If you look inside the cloud of Moses that now has come back to Ezekiel 1, and understand, there's lots of connections between Ezekiel and Moses. You could read through that pages-wise. Ezekiel and Moses have a lot of similarities. Here's the point. The cloud that led Moses and his people, we're now getting a glimpse inside of it. And when you look inside of it, there's these four weird creatures that are going every which direction. Wherever the Spirit, wherever the Ruach of God is taking them, that's where they're going. Verse 15. Now, as I looked at the living creatures, I saw a wheel on the earth beside the living creatures, one for each of the four of them. Oh, this is interesting. Here's another detail. Now, when you look down, there is a wheel on the earth. Am I saying that word right, Jerry? Wheel? That's a word I've been told I say wrong. A wheel on the earth besides the living creatures. So here you have the living creatures up in the cloud darting to and fro like lightning. They have weird faces and weird wings, and they're mysterious looking. But the wheel is here on the ground. Verse 16, as for the appearance of the wheels and their construction, Their appearance was like the gleaming of beryl. The four had the same likeness, their appearance and construction being, as it were, with a will within a will. When they went in any of the four directions without turning as they went. And their rims were tall and awesome, and the rims of all four of them were full of eyes all around. And when the four living creatures went, the wills went beside them. And when the living creatures rose from the earth, the will rose. So do you notice what's happening? Wherever these creatures are going, the wills are going. But notice again the idea here. You have here the spirit leading them where they should go. The creatures are then following. The wills are then following them, all within this idea of the cloud. Don't forget the cloud. Verse 19. And when the living creatures went, the wills went beside them. And when the living creatures rose from the earth, the wills rose. Wherever the spirit wanted to go, they went. And the wills rose along with them, for the spirit of the living creatures was in the wills. Oh, here's another point. If you want to find the ruach of these creatures, where do you look? Inside the wills. Verse 21. When those went, they went. When those stood, they stood. And when those rose from the earth, the wills rose among them, for the spirit of the living creatures was in the wills. Here's this, it's an amazing image. You have these wills that are turning on the earth, that are rapidly turning. And inside these wills that are moving, you have the spirit of these creatures. And as the creatures go, there the wills will go. Verse 22. Over the heads of the living creatures, there was the likeness of an expanse shining like the awe-inspiring crystal spread out above their heads. Again, notice this phrase. The likeness of an expanse. What does that remind you of? Genesis 1. Here above these creatures, there's an expanse that Yahweh has made. Verse 23. And under the expanse, their wings were stretched out straight one toward the other, and the creatures had two wings covering its body. And when they went, I heard the sound of their wings like the sound of many waters, like the sound of the Almighty, a sound of tumult, like the sound of an army. And when they stood still, they let down their wings. Notice here what the wings are doing. When the wings are moving of these creatures, you hear the sound of rushing water. You hear the sound of an army. You hear the sound of the Almighty. You hear the sound of an army. But when these wings stop, then the noise will stop. Verse 25. And there came a voice above the expanse over their heads. When they stood still, they let down their wings. And above the expanse over their heads, oh, there was the likeness of a throne, an appearance like sapphire. And seated above the likeness of a throne was a likeness with a human appearance. And upward from what had the appearance from the waist, I saw as it were gleaming metal, like the appearance of fire enclosed all around. And downward from what had the appearance of his waist, I saw as it were the appearance of fire, and there was brightness around him, like the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of the rain. So was the appearance of the brightness all around. Such was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Yahweh. And when I saw it, I fell on my face, and I heard the voice of one speaking. What is all this about? Now, this should give you chills if you really know what this is about. Ezekiel is one of the few men who's ever lived who gets to see the appearance of the likeness of the Lord. Not since Sinai has God made his presence known like he is to Ezekiel. Even Isaiah, in his visions that he saw, did not get to see the grandeur that Ezekiel's getting to see. But here's the idea. Understand chapter 1 with me. You have these four creatures with weird faces and many wings, and their will stationed on the bottom. Wherever the Spirit goes, they will go. They are working within the cloud. But as you work above the cloud then, there is the voice of God, the glory of God speaking. What does all this mean? Go over to chapter 10. Look over to chapter 10. This is a point where you have to read the prophets with humility. What I mean by that is, when you get to the end of chapter 1, you still don't know the purpose of the wills. you still don't know really what these wings are doing, nor do you know why this vision is there in the first place. Write those questions down as you study, rather than give a conjecture about, well, here's possibly what the ox means. Write down these questions because possibly Ezekiel's going to answer it later. Look at chapter 10. Then I looked and behold, on the expanse that was over the heads of the cherubim, there appeared above them something like a sapphire, in appearance like a throne. And he said to the man clothed in linen, go in among the whirling wheels underneath the cherubim. Fill your hands with burning coals from beneath the cherubim and scatter them over the city. Do you see the wheels come back? Do you see the throne of God come back? Something major is about to happen. Verse 3. And he went in before my eyes. Now the cherubim were standing on the south side of the house when the man went in, and a cloud filled the inner court. And the glory of the Lord went up from the cherub to the threshold of the house, and the house was filled with the cloud, and the court was filled with the brightness of the glory of the Lord. And the sound of the wings of the cherubim was heard as far as the outer court, like the voice of God Almighty when he speaks. Understand the image that we've just seen. Here you see the cloud filling the temple. You see the creatures flying and going every which way. And here you see them, they're on the move. Verse 6. When he commanded the man clothed in linen, take fire from between the whirling wheels, from between the cherubim, he went in and stood beside a wheel. And a cherub stretched out from his hand from between the cherubim the fire that was between the cherubim, and took some of it and put it into the hands of the man clothed in linen, who took it and went out. The cherubim appeared to have the form of a human hand under the wing. And I looked, behold, there were four wheels beside the cherubim, one beside each cherub. And the appearance of the wheels was like sparkling beryl. Exact same language from chapter 1, but here's the difference. The cherubim have taken the place of the living creatures. Verse 10, as for their appearance, the four had the same likeness of a wheel that was within a wheel. When they went in any of the four directions without turning as they went. But in whatever direction the front wheel faced, the others followed without turning as they went. And their whole body, their rims, and their spokes, their wings, and the wheels were full of eyes all around, the wheels of the four that them had had. As for the wheels, they were called in my hearing the whirling wheels. And every one of the four faces, the first face, the face of the cherub, the second of a human face, the third of a lion, the fourth of an eagle, the cherub mounted up. These were the living creatures that I saw beside the Cheber Canal. The creatures that he saw were actually cherubim. He just didn't understand it yet. But these cherubim are now taking the wheels, and the wheels are moving. Verse 15, and the cherubim mounted up. These were the living creatures that I saw by the Cheber Canal. And when the cherubim went, the wheels went beside them. And when the cherubim lifted up their wings to mount from the earth, the wheels did not turn from beside them. When they stood still, they stood still. And when they mounted up, they mounted up with them. The spirit of the living creatures was in them. Here's the point. You have Yahweh, get this image with me. Yahweh is exalted up in the heavens in the expanse. Below him then are these four living creatures with the great appearance of the cherubim. They then are mounted to these wheels that are moving down on the earth. As the cherub move to whichever direction they're going, the wheels are following with them. Where are these cherub going? Verse 18. Then the glory of the Lord went out from the threshold of the house and stood over the cherubim. And the cherubim lifted up their wings and mounted up from the earth before my eyes as they went out, with the wheels beside them. And they stood at the entrance of the east gate of the house of the Lord. And the glory of the God of Israel was over them. Do you notice what happens here? The glory of the Lord goes from the house. The cherub, and thus the wheels, move. And they go outside the temple. Verse 20. These were the living creatures that I saw underneath the God of Israel by the Cheber Canal, and I knew they were cherubim. Each had four faces. Each had four wings. And underneath their wings, the likeness of human hands. As for the likeness of their faces, they were the same faces whose appearance I had seen by the Cheber Canal. Each one of them went straight forward. What does all this mean? It's tragedy. The glory of the Lord has left the temple. The glory of the Lord has left the temple. Now here's my question. I said that, I, the most verbose of all, said that in one sentence. The glory of the Lord left the temple. Why didn't Ezekiel come out and just say that in plain spoken language? He could have just said what he meant and meant what he said and just kept it simple. Well, imagine you're a Hebrew. You hear the glory of God leaves the temple. Tragedy, yes. But then you understand not only has something happened with these wills, but if you look above the wills to the heavenly realm, the glory of God has acted in the heavenly realm to leave the temple. What we have seen here is a spiritual level of captivity. Because captivity was not merely the exile of God's people to Babylon. It was God's presence leaving his people. You could go through the language that we just read. You can go back in a lot more detail and ask, okay, why an ox? What about these human hands? Why two wings, etc.? But if you don't first understand this is about God's glory leaving the temple, you've missed the picture Ezekiel's wanting you to understand. Get the picture of what Ezekiel's talking about. Now, I'm already a little bit over time. You've been so patient. Let me show you just a couple more verses from Ezekiel. Go to Ezekiel 43. Ezekiel 43. I really appreciate y'all's patience tonight. I wanted to share so much more with you from Ezekiel. Look at Ezekiel chapter 43. If you look at your outline, this is the part of hope given in the book. Ezekiel 43, verse 1. He led me to the gate facing east. That's the temple gate facing east where he was. And behold, the glory of the God of Israel was coming from the east. The sound of his coming was like the sound of many waters, and the earth shone with his glory. And the vision I saw was just like the vision I had seen when he came to me to destroy the city, and just like the vision that I had seen by the Cheber Canal, and I fell on my face. And the glory of the Lord entered the temple by the gate facing east. The Spirit lifted me up and brought me into the inner court. And behold, the glory of the Lord filled the temple. Do you notice what it says in verse 3? The vision I saw was just like the vision I had seen when he came to destroy the city. What were those coals for that the cherubim had gathered? It wasn't to go and cleanse Isaiah. It was to destroy the city. What the cherubim were doing were leaving the temple and going then to ransack the city. Here's what the people needed to understand. It's not Nebuchadnezzar who's destroying your city. It's God who's destroying your city. Because you have filled it with wickedness and unrighteousness and sin, and God is now going to act in judgment against you, and he is even going to send his heavenly host against you so that the city can be destroyed. But now these cherub who left the temple, who escorted God's glory out of the temple on its way to destroy the city, much as it had entered at Sinai, is now coming back to fill the temple. And thus when Haggai talks about the glory of Yahweh will fill the temple, how did Haggai know the glory of Yahweh would fill the temple? Because it's what Ezekiel had promised. And we're just getting started, but I'm going to wrap up. My purpose tonight was just to excite you a little bit, hopefully, to read Ezekiel. Just to give you a bit of introduction to this grand book. Understand what I said at the beginning. You can be getting your songbooks out. understand what I said at the beginning. If you go through the book of Revelation and start trying to ask, what is this seventh angel? But don't understand what the angels are doing in the first place, you're completely going to get the book wrong. Even more so, if you don't understand why an ox appears in Revelation, hint, it's from Ezekiel, you'll start reading our times into Revelation. This is critical, I think, for a proper reading of Revelation. You have to understand the reference to his symbols. What I mean by that is, you have to understand what he's really getting his symbols from. He's not looking into the future 2,000 years to find helicopters as winged creatures. Very common view, believe it or not. But it comes from Ezekiel. If people would just read Ezekiel, they would see so many of these nonsense interpretations don't even fit the text. Look at Ezekiel, look at Isaiah, look at Daniel. Read Zechariah if you have time. I know it's a lot of reading. But then we'll get into Revelation, and hopefully God will blow our minds and our spirits as we come to understand this awesome book and what it contains. For the invitation tonight, I want to read you my favorite paragraph of the entire scripture. And Matt, I don't have many favorite paragraphs. I have many favorite books, and I have many favorite verses, but this is my favorite paragraph in the whole Bible. Listen with me. Ezekiel says, "My servant David shall be king over them, and they shall have one shepherd. They shall walk in my rules and be careful to obey my statutes. They shall dwell in the land that I gave to my servant Jacob, where your fathers lived. They and their children and their children's children shall dwell there forever, and David my servant shall be their prince forever. I will make a covenant of peace with them. It shall be an everlasting covenant with them, and I will set them in their land and multiply them, and my sanctuary will be in their midst forevermore. My dwelling place shall be with them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Then the nations will know that I am Yahweh who sanctifies Israel when my sanctuary is in their midst forevermore." Every major theme of Scripture is in this paragraph from Ezekiel 37. And y'all, we are now the recipients of this age. The Messiah has come and has atoned for sin on the cross. And as Jesus died and rose again by the breath of the Holy Spirit, he established a new covenant that would offer redemption and sanctification to all who would come. And he promised to these people, "I will give you peace, I will give you forgiveness, I will give you redemption if you will be my people and come to me." What an awesome invitation we have to accept. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation this afternoon, come forward while we stand and sing.